for those who first don't know the story, how did Phineas Gage get his famous injury?
He was doing a process called tamping. He and his crew were drilling holes in large rocks, packing those rocks with an explosive powder and sawdust in order to sort of detonate those rocks and then continue to lay down railroad tracks. So basically they were using explosives to clear rock for track. At some point, you get different versions of this story depending on the author, but something goes wrong. The charge goes off while Gage is still holding this tamping iron, and the rod gets fired into his left cheek, out the top of his forehead, lands about 30 yards away, that sort of in summary is how he received his injury.
And when you look at the pictures of Phineas Gage with this tamping iron, we're not talking about a small piece of equipment. This is a large iron.
It's significant. Somewhere around 3 feet, 7 inches long. Sort of people estimate his height to be maybe about 5'6". So it was more than half of him, if that makes sense.
He was injured, obviously. What's surprising is that he lived.
It was so amazing that it was not really widely believed initially. You know, it happened sort of outside of a real prime medical area out in the country in Cavendish, Vermont. And it sounded so unbelievable that there was doubt initially on the case. So that's actually why one of the reasons why Gage and his attending physician, John Harlow, came to Harvard to have him examined, because people didn't believe that it actually could have occurred. It was so amazing. People looked at it with a great deal of skepticism.
Now, aside from the obvious physical changes, how did this change him, his personality, the way that he acted?
It's sometimes hard to separate fact from fiction in terms of the actual changes of Gage. There's only a couple primary source materials that people often rely on, but the basic difference is he went from being well-liked, responsible, business-oriented, very good at setting goals and following through to achieve those goals, all that prior to the accident. And then after the accident, there's reports of him being vulgar and crass, irresponsible, can no longer hold on to a job, sets sort of fanciful goals, but obviously can't create the steps to even achieve these fanciful goals or the smaller goals that he sets for himself. Once he's described as childlike very early on in his recovery. So the shift basically goes along that continuum.
And if those accounts are true, then it raises a lot of those complex questions of brain science. Did the injury cause the changes? And if so, were they permanent, or might his brain be able to start working around the injury, so to speak?
So this is kind of an interesting thing I find about the Gage case, is most of the heavy reporting is in the very beginning. And so they talk about his detailed recovery, his several months of convalescence under the care of his physician, Harlow. But it's unlike medical care today. There's not a lot of follow-up. Once Harlow leaves Gage's immediate care, we actually don't know a great deal about Gage. He does end up in Santiago, Chile, working on a stagecoach for 6 years. And so that, coupled with some other parts of his life, some have led some scholars to believe that there's a social recovery here, that it's possible that Gage was able to acquire some sort of independence. And so either he was adapting socially or his brain was compensating. It's hard for people to really know, but there are certainly some things that suggest that he was able to form some sort of independence.
One thing that seems to have been the case for Phineas Gage was that he carried the tamping iron, the one that had injured him, around with him where he went. Why?
That's a good question. Initially, when he comes to Harvard in 1850 to be examined by Henry Jacob Bigelow, he leaves the tamping iron in the care of the Warren Museum. They actually put a large inscription on the tamping iron at that time. In our logbooks from that period, Phineas Gage is listed as the donor of this tamping iron. But he comes back for it shortly after. And he's always, the few pictures that we have of Phineas Gage, he's holding the tamping iron. It's often remarked that he carried it with him when he was putting himself on display, either at Barnum's Museum in New York City or several of the medical schools he visited or some of the county fairs that he did in New England. And so it's clearly always with him. When he ends up being exhumed in San Francisco and the skull given to Harlow, who gets it to Harvard Medical School, the tamping iron's right there with it.
For those who haven't been to the museum, could you describe what the skull of Phineas Gage looks like?
It looks like a skull, I guess, not to overstate the obvious, but it's been sectioned, so the cap of the skull has been removed. There is a large fragment sort of in Gage's forehead that was actually reset by Harlow and put back on. next to that large fragment, and around, you know, it's a very obvious fragment. It sort of protrudes slightly, and you know, that's the clear exit wound. There is a small hole in the skull next to that fragment in his forehead that they often talk about, actually, in some of the literature as well, that formed a slight depression. So that hole was always open. And if you look at his jaw, he's missing one back molar that was probably caused from the injury. But the real damage is when you look into his left eye socket. You can see the really heavy destruction that happened when the bar passed through. In addition, he has a slight fracture over his left eye where it's been suggested that actually his skull came apart a little bit and then the elasticity of his skin pulled it back together. But it's really looking through that eye socket, that left orbit, where you can see the real extensive damage of the bar.
And how many times would you say you had to look at it before you could not cringe thinking about those injuries?
The skull itself doesn't necessarily evoke that for me. It's when I read the descriptions, and you can read these descriptions by Harlow, listing all the things that Gage goes through, especially in those first couple months. He battles infection. They're doing sort of applications of silver nitrate directly to his brain. They're keeping his wounds open to drain him. And then just him coming in and out of fever, coming in and out of consciousness. When I read those descriptions, then you start to really, really feel, you know, so for how critical a condition that Gage was in, and that's what makes his survival that much more remarkable.